Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on the show, and what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. Here we are, deep in stick season. The trees are bare, the skies are gray, holiday cheer is still a ways away, as is ski season. One of my family members has been having a pretty rough go of it recently with their health, and I don't know about you, but I have just been dragging. I need some inspiration. That's why today I am so pleased to be joined by our guest, Toussaint St. Negritude. He's an artist, poet, musician, and hat maker. Yes, a haberdasher living in the Northeast Kingdom. He has a new collection of poetry out, his first. It's called Mountain Spells from Rootstock Publishing. And he joins us now from our studio in Montpelier to talk to us about it. Toussaint, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. Thank you. It's such an honor to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. And listeners, we are glad to have you with us this hour as well. We'd love to hear from you. Perhaps you've seen Toussaint read some of his poetry at an event recently, or maybe you have some tips for us for tapping into creativity this gray time of year. You can give us a call at 800-639-2211, or you can send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Toussaint, are you a person who, like me, suffers from a little bit of seasonal affective disorder, or are you still feeling as vibrant or as creative as ever despite our gray skies?
Yes, I suffer the same things everyone else does. It's interesting. I grew up in California and San Francisco, and so without what I now know as winter. And, because of the fog in San Francisco, it's overcast all year long. But it never depressed me. I kind of liked it because, I never needed to squint. It was very, easy on the eyes. But yeah, this is going into my 16th winter in Vermont, and yes.
Your 16th winter. What have you learned about persisting through the cold as someone who grew up in the Bay Area?
I've learned to embrace it. Just kind of one of those age-old lessons with so much in life. Definitely anything that can be a struggle is to embrace it, get out in it, start the winter by not lighting your stove. feel the cold, get out, take long walks. And then I really do enjoy it. Usually by the time I get to January, I'm loving it.
Good for you. I'm still working on that love, but I'm hoping I'll get there. Toussaint, you have done some readings recently at Bear Pond Books in Montpelier, the Athenaeum Library in St. Jay, a couple other spots. What has this book launch felt like for you?
Oh, it has been so wonderful. It has... It's been emotional. It's been, it reminds me, I have a dog, that's four now and, has been pretty rambunctious all of his life. And, this book kind of reminds me of him and that it's like the leash is going, like the book has its own legs, and I'm so tremendously grateful. It definitely underscores my love of Vermont, that I can receive so much support here. When I moved here, the first town I lived in was St. Johnsbury. Mm-hmm. I worked at Catamount Arts, and suddenly I realized I was surrounded by like 800 fiddles and 900 banjos. And I didn't know how me, this avant-garde jazz bass clarinetist and crazy poet would fit in. And I have somehow, which has really been wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you have brought a couple poems today to read with us. I'm wondering if you might be able to share one of those now.
I would love to. Thank you. And I just want to add here, this book called Mountain Spells is kind of a collection of spells towards liberation. And I was looking more in terms of inner self-liberation. Lots of things we might not be able to change, like election processes.
Yeah.
But we can certainly make changes within ourselves. And this is a poem that reflects that. It's called Through the Wilderness. Through the wilderness of my freedom, through territories uncharted for corporate consumption, through cogent dreams and cosmic streams, I have climbed to find my star house. High amongst the peaks of an ever-emancipating consciousness, through these constellations strewn within my soul, here I have climbed to find my sanctuary, housing all the juju this new day can hold. Through days clouded in the valleys of self-deceit, through the darkest immobility of shackling bigotries, through hours journeyed by prayer and by hand and by feet, through hell and high water indignities, dangling inequities for the hungriest to eat, through powers stronger than all the calls for my defeat, I have climbed to find my star house, high amongst the peaks of my own true belief. Through declarations flowing from the sovereignty of peace, through the clear and present affirmation that the universe is inalienably mine to reach. Through this connectivity of all my soul to keep, through the envisioning of a sanctuary deep within my truth, I have climbed to find my star house, high amongst the peaks of a bright and fertile liberty, built for innermost use. Okay.
Oh, Toussaint, thank you so much. So beautiful. That is from Toussaint St. Negritude's new collection of poetry called Mountain Spells. Toussaint, you mentioned the star house. This is a very special place to you in the NEK. And some of our listeners might remember a story that aired a couple years ago on Vermont Public about you moving into this home and becoming a landowner. Can you tell us a little bit about your connection to the star house and to this land?
Yes, and thanks so much for mentioning it. Yeah, and I so appreciated that story that Anna Van Dyne did earlier. Several years ago, a bunch of friends and myself helped me build a tiny house for myself, which I've lived in now for 4 years, and I love it dearly. And I decided to call the house the Star House because it was a place of imagining, a place of infinite possibility, which I've so strongly needed.
Yeah.
It's really been a metaphor. We can live our lives working jobs that we hate or dealing with, you know, hatred, bigotry, all these things that really make our lives really finite. And I needed to have some place that could hold kind of like the universe. Mm. And that's what the Star House has been for me.
Now, as our former reporter Anna Van Dyne reported back in 2021 when that story first aired, fewer than 2% of Vermont residents identify as Black or African American. And of that fraction, less than a quarter of households own homes. I wonder if you could kind of tell us a little bit about the process of being able to buy that land. I mean, it was in part thanks to an online fundraiser through the work of local carpenters. How did community play into your ability to have this space of your own?
It was such a blessing. That particular land, you know, it was right after the first couple of years of COVID, and there was that crazy land grabbing thing that was going on. So it was really, I had come pretty close to giving up on trying to find a piece of land that I could afford that was entirely raised through GoFundMe. And a friend recommended just getting in touch with town clerks. Wherever you're interested in, call them up and find out where there's some land available. And that's what I did. Huh. It was just I had months prior than that, I had gone through realtors, and every time I would decide on a piece of land within an hour, someone bought it sight unseen from Milwaukee or some odd place. Mm. So it was a real convergence of miracles, which could be a title for my
biography. I was just going to say, that's got to be your next collection of poetry.
Exactly.
And you've lived in many different places in your lifetime, in the Bay Area, Haiti, Maine. Mm-hmm. How did you decide on Vermont as home?
You know, I was always curious about Vermont. I hadn't been here before. I moved here in 2009, and I left San Francisco in 2006 and moved to Philadelphia. And I was there for 3 years, and by the third year, I was ready to go back to San Francisco, and all the places I've lived outside of San Francisco have never been more than 2 or 3 years. And I always go back. And it is a testament to Vermont that Vermont has held me for these 15 years. And I have no intention of leaving, which is really wonderful. But yeah, how I got to Vermont, I was curious about it. And so from Philly, I took a week off from work and took the train. I just took the train up from 30th Street Station and stayed with some friends in Burlington and spent a week just kind of exploring. And as soon as the train crossed into Vermont, through Massachusetts, as soon as I saw the mountains, I was like, yes.
They spurred something in you.
Yes, because if I had gone back to California, I was hoping to move like up in the Sierras somewhere, like around Lake Tahoe. And I thought, well, this is close. So
what is it about mountains that moves you?
You know, I guess I grew up with them. In San Francisco, because it's so hilly, any view north, east, or south, you're seeing mountains across the East Bay or north or south. And As a kid, my mother would often, we'd take day trips up to the Sierras, and I've just always found a sanctuary with mountains, a real spiritual comfort, a safe place with mountains. And I appreciate how old they are, how much mountains like withstand so much of what in our cities and our towns we think is so important. You know, mountains don't care about gentrification. Mountains don't care about, you know, racial segregation. And just that withstanding, that literal above it all presence. You know, the first time I flew out of California, flew over the Sierras and could see the tops of the mountains above the clouds. And below those clouds, it's like storming. But at the peak of the mountains, above the clouds, it's sunny and blue sky. And that's always been a metaphor for me, a guidance.
Tissot, you just brought up some big social issues that face us today in the United States: gentrification, racism, and I wanted to get your thoughts on an event that you were involved with last summer in Lindenville, a queer poetry event where you were reading, where there were a number of protesters outside the library protesting you and your work. It was an experience at the time that made you feel, understandably, very unsafe. And now you're on this book tour, going around the state, and again, standing up in front of people you might not know, and reading your work. I can imagine that might feel very vulnerable, and I'm wondering how your experience has been with that so far.
Thanks so much for asking that. Yes, it is extremely vulnerable. And yeah, life just seems to be becoming more and more vulnerable. you know, in my writing and in my performance of my writing, there's always been kind of a necessary vulnerability. Like I'm 65. I've been doing this since I was like 18. So I've literally been doing it for a long time. And, you know, it's always been nerve-wracking. When I was younger, it was so nerve-wracking that the papers in my hand would, you know, rattle like a snare drum. But eventually I realized that it was that vulnerability, especially talking about homophobia, talking about the threat of being jumped last night as you were walking home because you're gay, or talking about, you know, racism in the job interview process, or, you know, finding an apartment. And I have volumes of stories to tell towards that end. But I found that no matter how painful or nerve-wracking it could be to express these experiences, these feelings, these emotions, these realities, that vulnerability is what makes my poetry worthwhile. Is what really gives it its value. I play the bass clarinet and play jazz, and I find the same thing in music. And I think all the arts, vulnerability is a requirement. And the catch is like how best we can maneuver it and how best we can share it to liberate someone else out there who doesn't have a microphone or doesn't have an outlet to share their vulnerability. But But yes, talking about that incident in Lindenville, where, yes, I was asked by the Cobley Library, which is my local library, one of my favorite libraries. And I've grown up going to libraries since I was a kid, throughout my adulthood, everywhere I've lived. First on my list has always been to find out where the library is. And the libraries have always been my place of safety, place of wonder, you know, place of learning, place of access. And fortunately, that's been true with every library I've used, which I'm so grateful for. And the Cobley had, June of 2023, had asked me to lead a queer poetry discussion group. Pride Month, you know, nothing unusual about that. And I did. I was looking forward to it. There was just a small handful of people that showed up, and the premise was very open. Bring a book or, you know, a poem of your favorite poem by a queer artist. That was it. So there was a small group that brought, you know, their own books, and we were reading aloud from various poets, from Audre Lorde to, you know, all sorts of other poets. And midway through, one of the librarians comes upstairs and informs us that the building is surrounded by a hate group and that they had to close the library immediately. But as they evidently were particularly protesting me, I had to be escorted out the back door. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my generation, the stories that I heard of the civil rights movement and the dangers, the toils, were more of my parents' generation. You know, I read about it. I knew about it. I do remember when Martin Luther King was assassinated. But I never... I never thought that there would be a day where my life would literally be threatened for being myself. And if I ever had thought about that, it might have been like in lower Mississippi, Alabama, you know, Texas. But the idea that I had to experience that not only in the alleged North, I kind of decided shortly after I moved here that the only North is what's north of the Canadian border, that everything south of the Canadian border is what we think of as South, that there really is no distinction as far as hatred between Alabama or Vermont. And unfortunately, I learned that firsthand because in the promotion for the event, there were flyers around town, you know, welcoming people to come that had my name and my photo on it, as it should. And so these people knew my name, knew my face, and were chanting my name.
Go ahead.
Yes.
I just want to ask you something about that, because one of the unique things about Vermont and particularly the NEK is, you know, it's a sparsely populated place with some very close-knit towns. So if you show up to protest someone, there's a real good chance that they're going to know exactly who you are, or they're going to know your uncle, or you're going to run into them a day later at the general store. I'm curious how that dynamic played into your experience of this protest. Like, were these people that you knew or that you have encountered since?
I didn't know them beforehand. And because of the racial dynamics as they are here in Vermont, you know, unfortunately, all of that noted community, you know, everybody knowing you, knowing your neighbors, that rarely applies to Black residents here in Vermont, or at least that has not been my experience.
Okay.
So I get it that everybody else knows each other, but, you know, I'm ostracized. And so I didn't know these people beforehand. But since then, it has been so awkward because I do run into them at the local grocery store or, you know, a place getting my winter tires. I do run into them. And there was one member of this group, as I was being snuck out of the back of the building, one of the haters chased me down the street, which is terrifying, absolutely terrifying. And that person I see regularly at the grocery store.
Wow.
And around town. And, you know, do I have the right to say, get out? You know, get out of the grocery store? No, I don't have that right. They have the right to be there. And that is one thing that's so weird about American democracy, that you know, the oppressed get to hang out with their oppressors. It's all legal.
Mm. Well, we just got an email, Tucson, from Bob, who's the director of the Athenaeum at St. Johnsbury. And Bob writes, "It's so great to hear you on Vermont Public. We are waiting for the audio edition of Mountain Spells, and we can't wait to see you soon." So, yes, there is a lot of love for Toussaint St. Negritude out there. Is there going to be an audio edition of Mountain Spells?
Yes, we're working on it now. And thank you, Bob. Thank you so much. And thanks to all of you. I so appreciate it. We're working on a Samantha with Rootstock Publishing. We're putting plans together now for an audiobook that we hope to have available in the spring. So we're working on it. I'm excited about that. And also, I actually have a full-length album that I recorded a couple of years ago to be pressed on vinyl. And it's so much poetry and music that the plan is to have it pressed as a double album. And I've had a band called Jaguar Stereo. It's a duo of an upright bass player by the name of Gaylord DeWald, who is just fabulous, and myself, bass clarinet and poetry.
You two must have the best two names of a duo that I have ever heard. I'm glad you've teamed up.
I love working with him dearly. During the height of COVID, he decided it was safer to move to Hawaii, which I will not fault him for.
Nope.
But we're still planning things for the future. But I have this album that has been mixed and mastered and ready to go. But we're just waiting on the humongous funds to press it on vinyl.
Mm.
I hope to get that done maybe by the end of the year. But in the meantime, we'll have this audiobook out soon.
Always something magical cooking with you, I am learning. Toussaint, you brought another poem to share with us today. Would you be willing to read that for us now?
Sure. This poem is called Cosmographies in Bloom. One of my favorite things about living in Vermont pretty much anywhere here, maybe anywhere outside of Burlington, is we have such a magnificent view of the night sky. And I love looking at the stars. And to me, being a writer, the stars look like some form of hieroglyphics or some form of cartography or language. And I'm determined to decipher it. And so, yeah, I came up with this word cosmography, and cosmography's in bloom. Down a song flowing north, amid the boreal wilderness of innermost transformation, appears the realm of the soul rising mountains of the moon at dawn. Obliged by the gods, down a song of stars and coniferous splendor, greens the calling of reaches higher than our shadows can modernly conceive. Down a song flowing north rises the dawn land of illuminations, welcoming the innermost of elevations to passages of expansions duly received. Behold such noble means of galactic introspection. Behold each peak surrounding each surrounding peak upon peak upon peak. Behold each bewitching reach. Behold this ascension of irrepressible peace. Behold your emancipation from all dominions otherwise, for here is where your unconquerable wilderness glistens in the liberty your passion calls home. Welcoming all illuminations to the dawn land incandescence of innermost reclamations, unshackling the sages from the ages, long now blazing and found. Down this song flowing north amid the boreal chicories, lining the cosmos from the astral floor, appears the realm of the soul rising mountains of the moon at dawn. Obliged by the gods of blossoming cosmographies, behold this land your passion calls home.
Okay. That's Toussaint Saint Negritude. Wow, you have me inspired. Thank you so much for sharing your poetry with us today and your stories. We so appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And you can learn more about Toussaint and perhaps see him do a poetry reading soon. We'll include a link to that information in the show notes for Vermont Edition's show today.